Why is immigration reform so important to agriculture in the Midwest, and in particular, Missouri and Illinois?
Well, you've got basically farms and ranches in both Missouri and Illinois and the state of Iowa throughout the Midwest that are dependent in part on immigrant labor. It may be a dairy operation. It may be a fruit and vegetable producer that needs labor at certain points in time in the year or throughout the year. And the reality is that as this labor force becomes less certain, as we don't fix our broken immigration system, that producer has to decide whether or not to continue productivity, continue to expand an operation, or whether to basically take a step back and contract and reduce productivity. And the sad reality is that in throughout the United States, we're seeing producers make that decision to scale back, not to produce as much. And in some parts of the country, we're actually seeing farms, large operations, move their operations outside the United States. This impacts and affects the United States in a variety of ways. First and foremost, it obviously impacts the amount of food that's available to consumers in this country and basically makes us less food secure. Secondly, it impacts jobs because if we have less in production, we've got fewer exports. Exports often means jobs, nearly a million jobs supported by exports alone. So if you scale back on exports, you're obviously scaling back on jobs. So it's a critically important issue for producers in every part of the country.
And you're in favor of the Senate immigration reform bill that expands the temporary visa program for agricultural workers.
Well, it would do two things. It would create a permanent workforce of those who have been in agriculture, working in agriculture, who may have come to this country years ago but have, are not properly documented. It would give those folks the ability to come out of the shadows, basically earn their way to citizenship over a long period of time after the payment of a fairly heavy fine, learning the language, and paying their back taxes. It would also complement that permanent workforce with a guest worker system that's far more practical than the system we have today. It's more practical because it gives us the ability to keep track of these folks as they come in and out of the country so that we calibrate the right number of workers so that we have not too many or too few. They have just the right amount so that working conditions, wage levels are reasonable and fair, and producers can be assured that they're going to have adequate hands to do the work that needs to be done.
We've been talking about farm labor, but I'm in St. Louis, which has a large concentration of biotech companies and research institutions. What would immigration reform mean to the nation's agricultural research, especially with regards to retaining international talent that comes to this country to study things like plant and seed genetics?
It would make it easier to continue to have that high-value workforce. Immigration reform basically focuses on making sure that the visa program for those scientists, those researchers, is doable, that provides greater flexibility than the current system, and gives us the capacity to attract more of the talent from around the world. It also addresses the issue of construction and some of the lower-wage opportunities that are still in need of workers, the restaurant and hotel chains, for example. Those two also would be benefited from immigration reform, but not at the expense of American citizens, because the bill basically provides, certainly in agriculture, that before a guest worker can assume any of these responsibilities, it's important for that farmer or rancher to go out and make sure that Americans are given the first opportunity, the right of first refusal about that job.
Many House Republicans, with regards to border security, say that the Senate plan is just too vague in terms of securing America's border, especially with Mexico. How would you respond to that concern?
I'd have two responses. First of all, it's an historic commitment in border security in terms of the size and scope of what the bill calls for, an extensive commitment. And secondly, the impact of that investment would be to have the equivalent of one border guard every 1,000 feet along that southern border. Obviously, that border is more secure today than it was 4 or 5 years ago, but it obviously would be far more secure with the historic investment that is being called for in the bill the Senate has passed. And in addition, our country would be economically stronger. There's no question that the economy grows with comprehensive immigration reform. The deficit comes down and Social Security is strengthened. So there are many, many benefits to have a comprehensive approach to immigration.
Yeah, and I want to ask you, we've been talking about economic impacts of migrant workers and temporary workers with regards to agriculture, but I want to ask you about their safety in the workplace. Between 2010 and 2012, U.S. Department of Labor found that there were hundreds of violations in Missouri and Illinois with regards to migrant workers that included things like unpaid wages, unsanitary working conditions. What more can be done to ensure the safety and fair working conditions for migrant workers?
When you create a comprehensive immigration reform system that works, part of that will be an e-verification system that will ensure that people are their status is being verified. You create a situation where those workers cannot be taken advantage of, and employers cannot be unscrupulous in terms of their attitudes towards workers. You create a level playing field for all those playing by the rules. You don't allow anybody not to play by the rules because they've got to verify their workers, and folks now have a pathway to earn citizenship. They can come out of the shadows. They don't have to be afraid to report violations, and so you'll see, a marked decline of those types of activities. Secondly, the bill basically creates a framework for certainty and a process to determine what appropriate wages are and working conditions, what they need to be fair and reasonable. So it gives producers a very clear understanding of what their responsibilities are if they want to utilize the guest worker system. So I think because there's clarity of what the expectations are and because you have an e-verification system that will basically assure us that we're keeping track of folks properly, you're going to raise everyone's game. And you're going to basically no longer reward those who don't play by the rules.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit about the farm bill that expires, of course, at the end of next month. And the House and Senate have passed farm bills, but there's some big differences between the two. Most notably, the House version does not include funding for nutrition assistance programs or food stamps. How likely is it, in your opinion, that members of both chambers can find some sort of compromise before that farm bill expires at the end of next month?
A couple of things. I mean, first of all, they have to recognize the consequences if we can't get it done. And there are two very serious consequences that folks may not be focused on. First, there's the consequence of our relationship with Brazil. Brazil basically brought a case against the United States and the World Trade Organization on cotton. They won that case, and as a result, they are given the right to basically retaliate against the United States products, goods, and services to the tune of perhaps as high as $850 million a year. They can assess tariffs on our products, our goods, our services, putting them at a competitive disadvantage in terms of export opportunities. That's going to impact and affect jobs. That doesn't have to be if we get a farm bill passed that fixes the cotton program. The Senate has basically done that. The House has attempted to do it, but we need a bill signed by the President for that to get done. Secondly, if nothing is done, there's not likely to be an extension of the existing programs, which means that we're going to get to a circumstance where we will trigger permanent agricultural law from the 1940s. This will require the United States government to go in and begin purchasing products and commodities at very high prices that will likely create shortages in grocery stores that over time will drive up prices for consumers. Now, these are two crises that can be easily avoided by the House of Representatives taking steps right now to name their conferees, to a conference committee to work out differences between the House and Senate versions, and getting the work done before September 30th.
I want to ask you about the removal of direct payments and the rise of crop insurance. We've seen the crop insurance program continue to grow over the years, and both of these new farm bills from the House and the Senate would increase funding for crop insurance. What protections are there, or do there need to be more protections to prevent crop insurance fraud?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, if we don't get a bill, those people who want reforms and want direct payments to end will not see the end of direct payments. They will continue. And we won't get the budget savings, which we will otherwise get if we eliminate direct payments. So not having a bill not only gives us the opportunity to see the Brazilian issue arise and the permanent law issues arise, but we don't get the reforms. So I think it's critically important that people recognize all of this. On crop insurance, I mean, this is basically something that people understand more easily. They don't understand direct payments where farmers are getting payments when times are great, when prices are at record levels. They don't understand the government sending a check to someone who's doing very, very well. What they do understand is people buying protection against Mother Nature. And we've seen last year with a historic drought, we've seen repeatedly with floods that farmers can do a perfect job of putting a crop in the ground. They can do a perfect job of maintaining that crop. But Mother Nature may decide to basically wipe that crop out. And in order for us to continue to be a food secure nation, in order for us to continue to have producers who are willing to take the risk of farming, we need a deal. We need a partnership between producers, insurance companies, and the government. That's crop insurance. Producers pay a premium for protection. The government helps and assists in the payment of that premium. The insurance company basically pays for losses when they occur. That's something that people basically understand, that insurance model, they understand it. So it's important, I think, for folks to understand that farmers do, in fact, pay a portion of the subsidy, or a portion of the premium, rather, for crop insurance, whereas with direct payments, they basically just get a check because they're growing a certain crop. And people just didn't understand that, and it's time for that to change.
But is there anything more that the federal government or your department can do to prevent any kind of crop insurance fraud?
Well, I think our risk management association and agency is asking for additional capacity to do audits, to do reviews of farmers that are basically making claims, and making sure that if there are repetitive claims that we're looking into it. I think you're seeing a more wary eye towards that over the last couple of years, but there's still work to be done. I do find it interesting that people often talk about SNAP fraud when that fraud rate is about 1%, and error rates that are about 3.5%. Well, if you look at the fraud and error rate in crop insurance, it's close to 8 to 9%. So we have work to do in that area, but oddly enough, Congress never talks about crop insurance. They're always talking about SNAP, and I think, frankly, if they're going to be legitimate about all this, that we ought to be looking at integrity issues in both programs, not just the SNAP program.
And you brought up sort of the extremes of the last couple of years as justification for the crop insurance program. Your department has put some money into researching how to help growers and producers in America deal with climate change. What are we looking at as far as climate change in terms of how it might impact agriculture in the long term in this country?
Well, we did recently an assessment of both climate change's impact on agriculture and forestry. And the bottom line is that as the temperatures increase, you're going to see more intense storms. You're going to see longer periods of drought. You're going to see more flooding, which obviously puts crops at risk. And that's why we are putting together a set of regional hubs, research hubs, that are looking at ways in which we can give farmers today tools in which they can mitigate the impacts of climate change and perhaps adapt to a changing climate. The more research that we do, the more information we gather, the more information we provide to producers, the better adjustments that they can make, whether it's the establishment of a cover crop or some kind of soil health management system that basically gives their soil the ability to retain moisture more effectively even in drought, or whether it's new seed technologies that allow us to do more with less, or a combination of that and much, much more in terms of reducing what's causing this climate change. All of those are issues that we're very focused on. That's one of the reasons why we need a farm bill, because that farm bill does indeed include, in the Senate version, a new way of assisting agricultural research by creating a foundation that would allow us to leverage our financial resources at USDA more effectively to do more research in these areas. So this is another reason why we need to get a farm bill done.